Welcome to the Rabbi and the CEO, separating fact from fiction and bubble mices from the bottom line. With your hosts, Rabbi David Vigler of Habata Palm Beach Gardens and CEO Mitch Zachary of Zachary Financial Consultants. Join the conversation through email, rabbi@jewishgardens.com. Watch the show on Facebook Live, facebook.com/gardensrabbi. Now here are your hosts, Rabbi David Vigler and CEO Mitch Zachary.
Separating the facts from the fiction and the Bubba Mices from the bottom line. Good morning and welcome to the Schmooze with the Rabbi and the CEO. Mitch Zachary is the CEO of Zachary Financial Consultants. I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Chabad Palm Beach Gardens, where you'll find traditional Jewish values for contemporary Jews just like you. And there's a lot going on in both of our worlds. Your world, Mitch, CEO. It's tax season coming up, I'm sure, sometime. Yep. Always Passover. They always schedule tax season for Passover.
Sometimes I get lucky and it's after Passover.
Well, this year it's after Passover, right?
No.
Is it the 15th of April?
No, I mean, sometimes I get lucky and it's after tax season.
Oh, Pesach is, yeah. is the festival of your freedom.
Right.
When it's after
That's
the tax
exactly
season.
Right.
For rabbis, too, it's a very, very busy time because there's a lot of questions, a lot of problems that people have to face when it comes to cleaning and getting ready for Pesach, because you need to know what is permissible, what's not permissible, what are you allowed to eat. There's so many commandments surrounding Passover. It's a really busy time. I'm exhausted.
And I hear a rumor that the men's club is having a meeting tomorrow with blowtorches and everything.
Yeah,
is this true?
Yeah, this is true. The men's
I never
club,
even held a blow. I don't know, a bunch of Jewish guys with blowtorches.
This
is a little
grade,
scary.
Commercial grade blowtorch. This is like weapons grade.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So, what this blowtorch?
We better keep the fire extinguishers handy.
Yeah. So the blowtorch that we're bringing is for the koshering of the kitchen. A very, very interesting concept in our tradition. Dates back to Moses. When the Jewish people fought the battle against the nation of Midian, they received many spoils of war, including dishes, and they weren't sure. They already had received the Torah from Mount Sinai. They weren't sure how or if they were allowed to use the dishes. They knew about the laws of kosher, but they didn't know about the dishes. So Moses tells them a fascinating revelation. He says like this: however the food flavor goes in other words, he says, one more thing. He says, not only is non-kosher food prohibited to consume, even non-kosher flavor is prohibited to be consumed. Which means, therefore, that if you cook bacon in a pot, right? The bacon for sure is treif. But what about the flavor?
Not if it's turkey bacon. Let's say ham, pork.
Isn't bacon ham? Bacon, ham, pork is
you
the same thing.
You can have turkey
no?
bacon.
Okay, as long if it comes from a pig.
Okay.
Then it's not kosher.
Okay.
You know that there was a whole discussion this week that some rabbi in Israel claims that he came up with the conclusion that lab generated bacon is kosher.
Wow.
It was an interesting conversation. That's going to be very interesting. He said not only is it kosher, but it's allowed to be eaten with cheese.
Wow.
So this might very well be the rise of the kosher cheeseburger, as if I'm missing it. But anyways.
The kosher bacon cheeseburger.
Bacon cheeseburger, yes. So the question I just want to tell you, Mitch, is like this, is that when it comes to non-kosher, not only is the non-kosher food prohibited, but even the non-kosher flavor is prohibited. So when the non-kosher flavor is cooked into the walls of the pot, then the pot itself is treif. How do you get it out? This is what Moses tells the Jewish people when the war from Midian. If the flavor went in through wet heat, through water, boiling water, then it has to come out through boiling water. You kosher it by pouring boiling water all over it or immersing it in boiling water. If the flavor went in through dry heat, like a lamb on a spit or a roast, for example, or broil, then it has to come out through dry heat, which is effectively fire. That's a blowtorch. And that's the reason why we at the Chabad are koshering our kitchen, as we do every year for Pesach, with the blowtorch, with the boiling water, to extract the non-kosher flavors that got in, or the non-Pesach flavors that got into the countertops and the sinks and whatever else, the warmers, in order to make sure that we can turn this into an educational experience for our men's club, that they can enjoy an experience. You know, men, beer, fire, you know, boiling water. It's all very exciting.
Cigars,
okay. Yeah, it's all very exciting.
Maybe some scotch.
Yeah, last year, I think it was a year or two ago, I tried to do it myself. Let me tell you, bad idea. I poured boiling water on my foot. It was a disaster. Thank God I got over it. But I left this year to professionals.
Yes,
I'm not It was pretty bad. On the line, we have a guest. Welcome to the Schmooze. This is the director, the plant manager of the name most synonymous with Passover, and that is the Manischewitz Company. On the line, we have our special guest is Rabbi Aaron Hayyum of the Manischewitz Company. He is the plant manager. Good morning, Rabbi Hayyum. Welcome to the Schmooze.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Baruch Hashem, we are so honored to have you here on as a guest on Schmooze Radio, broadcast in Florida and in New York. Tell us, where are you based, Rabbi?
I live in Brooklyn, but I work at the Manischewitz plant in Newark, New Jersey.
Newark, gotcha. So the Manischewitz name seems to have been forever associated internationally. I mean, I'm from South Africa, and it was just always Manischewitz. This must be a global company, which has always been associated not only with kosher food, but specifically with Passover. Can you give us a little background on what actually Manischewitz Company is and how it started?
Manischewitz Company was founded by Rabbi Dov Ber Manischewitz in 1888. He had come over from the old country in Lithuania in a little before that. Before he came, he was a student of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the founder of the Musar movement. And he was a very bright fellow, and he realized that opportunities for making a living in Lithuania in those days were not that easy. And he decided he was going to come to America to make his way in the world. He came to America, and he started out, actually, as a shochet, doing ritual slaughter. The first Pesach came around, and he could not find matzahs that were to his standard, that he would be happy eating on Pesach. So he baked his own matzah. He figured out how to bake matzah in his basement.
Wow.
The second year, some neighbors heard about it, and they said, oh, can we get some of that matzah? And he baked for his neighbors and his friends. And by the time the third year came around, more people even asked, he realized that maybe he should give up the shechita business and become a matzah baker. And the rest is pretty much history. He built some bakeries, and it just kept expanding and growing, and eventually they branched out into other areas of kosher food. What you mentioned is true. Manischewitz does have a full line of, you know, all different types of food, but we specialize kind of in Passover food.
Amazing. So you said that, is that global? Is that international now?
That is global, that is international. We sell to all over the world. As a matter of fact, there's some of our sales force that has taken upon themselves as like a mitzvah to make sure that there's Passover matzah and Passover, you know, the basics, anywhere there's a Jewish community. So some of the things that we do may not make sense from a business point of view, like shipping 2 or 3 pallets to different communities, that it's not easy to ship to those places. The cost of shipping it is more than the cost of the goods, but we understand that the people need to have places to get food, and you can't just go to your local grocery and get it, so we do that.
Amazing.
We literally ship all over the world.
So tell me this. So Manischewitz sounds like it's a Passover-based company. It's based on making matzah, but yet I'm thinking that it's got a lot to do with kosher year-round. Is that correct?
Yes, correct. Manischewitz is kosher year-round, but with a very, very strong focus on Passover.
Interesting. So what is it like to be the plant manager at the Manischewitz Company? Is this the largest kosher company in America?
It is the largest kosher producer and company in America, correct.
How many products do you sell?
Close to 1,000.
Wow.
Amazing. So what are some of the more interesting products that you can tell us about? I mean, we know about the matzah, we know about the chocolate matzah. What else do you have that you can share with us that's interesting or maybe new on the line?
The basic staples are, as you would imagine, matzah, gefilte fish, borscht, you know, all the old things that are synonymous with Passover and with the core kosher foods. But we're always looking for things that are trendy or interesting or that the consumers are looking for. So over the last few years, gluten-free has become a very big deal.
Wow.
So we have a full line of gluten-free. We have gluten-free, we call them gluten-free matzah, but we write on the box that it is not a replacement for Seder matzah. In order for matzah to be fit for use at the Seder, it's got to, the Torah clearly says they have to watch the matzahs, that they should not become kermit. The rabbis in the Talmud explained that the only way you can watch a matzah from not becoming kermit is if it could become chametz. And the only matzah that could become chametz is a matzah that's made out of one of the 5 major grains. So when you're dealing with gluten-free, if it's not grain-based, it could be kosher for Passover, and people who are sensitive to gluten can enjoy that, they have what to eat. But when you're talking about the Seder, when you need to eat those measures of matzah, those need to actually be real matzah. What people who are gluten intolerant can do for that is there's oat matzah available, which many people with sensitivity to gluten can eat oat.
So
we have gluten-free matzah, we have gluten-free cake mixes, gluten-free, you know, all matzah ball mix, all kinds of gluten-free stuff.
What about spelt? What about spelt matzah?
We offer spelt matzah. Spelt is just, it's an ancient grain. For many people with gluten sensitivity, spelt is also a problem. We do offer spelt matzah. There are many people who like it. It is a little bit of a different flavor.
This is fascinating. So just to explain to our listeners that in order to be if you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Shmooze, where we're separating the facts from the fiction and the Bubba Mises from the bottom line. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Aaron Hayumi. He's a plant manager at the Manischewitz Passover kosher company, where so many of our kosher for Pesach products that are available in supermarkets not only in America but around the world are produced right here in Newark, New Jersey. And he's telling us about the kosher for Passover matzah. Basically, in order for matzah to be kosher, it's got to be made out of five grains. Wheat, barley, spelt, oats, or rye. Those are the five grains. Wheat, barley, spelt, oats, or rye. And it's got to be grains that have never been fermented, ever, that were came in contact with water for under 18 minutes. So if you go to the store and you buy flour, that's not kosher for Passover, because the flour you buy in Publix is typically bleach flour, which has already been exposed to water, has already been with water for a long amount of time, and it's become pure chametz, pure leavened. So even though it might not have fermented per se, it still has experienced fermentation, and therefore it's pure chametz. You have to be able to keep it kosher by using grains, flour, that have never come in contact with water at all.
So I have a question for you. You know, you produce products throughout the entire year, and I assume you must have a huge manufacturing facility. What's it like to convert that over to a kosher for Passover facility?
There's quite a bit of what the rabbi spoke about a few minutes ago, blowtorches and boiling water. Hmm. The oven itself, the matzah oven itself, needs to be kashered, and obviously there's no water involved in that. That's direct fire when you bake, so you need to use direct fire when you kasher it. Like the rabbi mentioned, there's a fair amount of it that gets done with blowtorches. The oven itself, you just raise it up to 1,000 degrees, and you let it go for 45 minutes.
Well, 1,000 degrees is going to make it kosher, that's for sure. It's going to burn anything inside of there. So let me ask you this question, Rabbi Aaron Hayum, plant manager at the Manischewitz Company, our guest this morning on Shmooze Radio. What is the story with machine matzah? I'll tell you why. The concern is that machine matzah might have, it's obviously different to the handmade matzah, because of the handmade matzah having constantly being replaced. Whenever they make the handmade matzah, they change the tablecloths and all the utensils at every round of making the matzah. The concern about the machine matzah is that there might be some flour residue in some of the metal machinery, which may stay from one cycle to the next cycle, which potentially could become a problem. Can you comment on this at all?
Yeah, the debate over machine matzah being acceptable for Passover use is as old as there have been machines. The debate is over 100 years old, and it's one of those things that has really never gone away. There were many great rabbis who expressed the concern that you just mentioned, that old machines certainly were very awkward, big gears and rollers, and it was difficult to get into every nook and cranny. And the concern was that there might be some dough that you were working on that got stuck in a corner somewhere, and it sat there for past the 18 minutes, it became chametz, and it might fall back into your product line. So they were not happy with using machines. However, there were many rabbis that held that machine matzah was preferable to hand matzah, because when we talk about 18 minutes, the number 18 minutes that dough is allowed to sit is if you mix flour and water, and you let it sit up till 18 minutes, it won't become chametz. Past 18 minutes, it'll become chametz. However, if that dough becomes warm, then you really have less than 18 minutes, because the leavening process starts quicker. Everybody, you know, all homemakers know when they're breaking bread, they make dough, they keep it in a warm place to help it rise. So there were rabbis that held that when you're making matzah by hand, you're actually touching it, and the heat from your body is warming it up,
expediting the 18-minute procedure.
Correct. Whereas if you're baking on a machine, machines are cold, and they held that it was preferable to use machines to bake matzo. Today, machines obviously are a far cry from the older machines that, you know, when the debate started. And for instance, our line was designed in a way that every conveyor belt, every roller, everything comes apart easily, and you can do a complete, thorough, beautiful cleanup job in a very quick amount of time. On our matzo line, we had five mashgichim on every shift. That's, you know, it's two shifts a day. And besides that, there was a mashgich who oversaw the process. So you had basically a rotation of about 12 mashgichim, you know, in the plant at all times, who were overseeing this. And there's mashgichim who are just, their job is just to walk around and to look into all the different pinch points and corners of the machine to make sure
very
that no dough or no flour scraps get left over there.
Did Manischewitz invent the machine matzah?
No.
You're talking 1888 here, you know.
Yeah, there were machines around before that. However, the Dov Ber Manischewitz, besides for being a very religious person and very focused on halacha, he was also a wizard with machinery. And actually, the family, the Manischewitz family, holds many patents for ovens and rolling equipment to make machine matzah.
How many boxes of matzah do you produce a year?
We produce enough matzah to we could make a road from here to Tel Aviv.
Wow.
And what about the wine? Tell us a little bit about the wine.
The wine is actually something that Manischewitz has not been involved with for many years. The name is licensed. There's a
really?
Very large wine producing company.
So it's not actually made by Manischewitz?
Wow, there's a first on for Schmooze Radio. Look at this.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. So you don't produce the wine at all?
I've used the wine, but it's not made by us. What happens is there's a big non-kosher company that uses the label, and when they get ready to do a production, they get a crew of about 15 guys come down, they kosher the plant, and they are actually the only people who work. As you're aware, wine is a very sensitive, you know, from a kosher standpoint, a very sensitive thing where you can't even have non-Jewish people involved in the production of it. So these people who go down, besides for kashering the equipment and kashering the factory, also learn how to use the equipment, and they actually run the production for a couple of days. And the volume is these new plants can produce so much that in a week they produce enough for a year's worth that we need.
So, Rabbi, take us a little bit through the organization of the plant very quickly. How many people work there, and kind of walk us through that.
The plant has, we had 180, about 250 people work full-time for Manischewitz. And then there's a fair amount of our product that we sell that we don't directly make. And you know, in today's world, with machinery, if you want to make a unique item, if you would have to invest in that equipment to make it, and you're only going to make a couple thousand cases, it's not really economical. So what you'll do is you'll go to a company that makes that product, and that's a specialist in that product, and either they're a kosher plant and they make it for you, or they're a non-kosher plant and you kosher their plant and then they make it for you.
It's
so
a fascinating
industry. There are hundreds of items that we make.
No, I'm saying it's a fascinating industry when it comes to commercial kosher in the factories and how they're able to transform non-kosher factories into kosher production lines. For example, I mean the Coca-Cola factory, how they make their kosher for Passover product, the Coca-Cola bottles with the yellow caps. It's a fascinating concept how they bring in a kosher agency and they're able to transform the line to make it up to kosher standards.
Yes, the consumers have no idea how many hundreds of hours, man hours, and flying all over to different corners of the globe are involved in making kosher foods.
So just kind of so that our listeners can get a handle on it, the only product that we see on the Seder table that's licensed out is the wine?
Correct.
Beautiful.
That's amazing. Rabbi Aaron Hayom is our guest this morning on Shmooze Radio. He's the plant manager at the Manischewitz Company, the largest kosher company in the United States of America, producing so much of the Passover products founded in 1888. Rabbi Aaron Hayom, one last question. Is all the matzah produced by Manischewitz kosher for Passover or not necessarily?
Not necessarily.
So you got to check the label on the box. Some of the matzah produced by Manischewitz is not kosher for Passover, and I believe it's very clearly indicated on the box if it's not kosher for Passover. So let's not make that mistake. Rabbi Aaron Ayum, thank you very, very much for joining us here this morning in Shmooze Radio, sharing with our listeners what goes on behind the scenes, behind the labels. We thought matzah comes from the supermarket. It actually comes from so much labor out there in Newark, New Jersey. Thank you very, very much, and happy Pesach to you.
You're welcome. I'd like to wish you and all your listeners a happy and healthy Passover.
Amen. Yashar Koach, from strength to strength, separating the facts from the fiction, the Bubba Mises from the bottom line. We'll be right back right after this brief commercial break with
Are you confused or just plain bored by the new tax laws? The professionals at Zachary Financial Consultants have studied every line of the 1,000-page bill and know all the ways that you can benefit from it, as well as all of the hidden traps you need to avoid. If you're a business owner, you may be able to save tens of thousands of dollars in taxes. But in order to take advantage of them, you may have to make some changes. The professionals at Zachary Financial Consultants can easily guide you through these muddy waters. Having over 37 years of financial experience, the staff at Zachary Financial Consultants include CPAs, certified financial planners, and attorneys. They regularly assist their clients in making sure they're maximizing their after-tax investment performance, that their families are adequately protected in case of a catastrophe, and in providing a customized financial plan which they help to implement and monitor. At Zachary Financial Consultants, every client is treated with personalized care as if they were part of the family. You can speak directly with the CEO, Mitch Zachary, at 561-508-8446 or email him at mzachary@zacharyfinancial.com. They are conveniently located in Palm Beach Gardens and they offer free consultations. That's Zachary Financial Consultants, 561-508-8446.
They say that caring for the elderly is a profession of the heart. As the director of home health care at Morse Life, I know that to be true. When I see an older person feeling safe and secure at home, I know I've done my job. To make a difference, to show compassion, dignity, and respect, it's not just our job, it's our mission.
Morse Life Home Healthcare.
Morse Life Health System, honoring senior living.
Call 561-471-5111 or visit morselife.org.
Welcome back to The Rabbi and the CEO. Watch the show live on Facebook, facebook.com/gardensrabbi. Now, back to your hosts, Rabbi David Vigler and CEO Mitch Zachary.
Separating the facts from the fiction and the Bubba Mises from the bottom line. Welcome back to The Shmooze with The Rabbi and the CEO. Mitch, you are conducting your own Seder this year.
On Friday night, I am the Seder.
Are you ready?
I've done it before.
Are you nervous?
No. Being with you every Sunday makes me nervous, Rabbi. If I can overcome that, I could do a Seder.
So let me fill you in, Mitch, on the crash course. I think it's such an important conversation. You know, yesterday we had a fellow in Shul who came over for the first time, and he said how much he enjoyed Shmooze Radio from Long Island. And he said that one thing he enjoyed so much about it is the fact that there was someone there who was able to ask the questions, and nobody would have the chutzpah to ask of a rabbi. But he felt what needed to be asked. So I just want, I know you weren't able to make it yesterday. So I just want to thank you for, you know, for having that very positive chutzpah. I'm calling it chutzpah, but it's really a very positive word to be able to, you know, to bring out the questions that people need to know. Because I think that this issue, which I want to discuss with you, Mitch, is something that a lot of people are struggling with. And that is the time of the Passover Seder.
What do you mean the time?
I remember when I first moved to Palm Beach Gardens.
You mean how long it takes or when it starts?
No, when it starts. I'll tell you why. When I first moved to Palm Beach Gardens, you know, we were planning a community Seder for like 7:30 p.m. And I'm noticing my neighbors have all the cars at their house like 4:30, 5 o'clock.
Yes, I've done that, yes.
And then I'm like, oh my God, what are they doing, you know? And then by like 7:30, 8 o'clock when we're starting our Seder, the cars are starting to leave. I was horrified. Mitch, I'm telling you, I was horrified. I couldn't believe it. If you start the Seder, if you do the Seder...
Well, what do you consider starting the Seder?
Well, if you do...
What triggers it?
If you do any of the mitzvahs, the unique mitzvahs of the Seder, which includes the 4 cups of wine, eating the matzah, the bitter herbs, and the discussion of the Passover experience, if you do those before nightfall, before 3 stars appear out in the night sky... You've not really done anything. You've really not done anything. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's a little bit like boarding the train before the train reaches the station. It's not a good idea. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because if you start the Seder, look, I don't want to mitigate, I don't want to minimize the the wonderful mitzvah that everybody is doing by gathering together for a Seder. That's a beautiful thing. However, you've got to make sure that you do it in such a way that the mitzvahs are observed in the time of the mitzvah, right?
Okay.
Timing is everything, right? Timing is everything. If you take out the garbage, that's a nice thing. Your wife will be very happy, right? But imagine you get up in the middle of the dinner table and you start taking out the garbage. Or let's say clearing the table, better example. Clearing the table is a nice thing your wife would appreciate if you did that, right? Imagine you start clearing the table as soon as the food was served. It would be an awful thing, right? You can't do that. Timing is everything. You take out, if you start clearing the table when everybody just was served their soup, it's going to be highly embarrassing to everybody. That's why if you start the Seder, if you conduct the Seder before nightfall, it's not yet the time of Passover. You're doing the Seder on the 14th of Nisan, not on the 15th of Nisan. You know, we start the Jewish day starts at nightfall. So it's not really considered the mitzvah.
So just a couple comments on that, Rabbi, from your secular friend over here.
Okay.
All right. When you've got a house full of kids, when you've got relatives that want to eat and run, you can't. So it's not practical.
Why is it not practical?
Because you...
Kids. Let me answer those questions. Okay. Kids.
Let's take it one at a time. Kids.
Our kids, myself, when I was a kid, we were all told you have to take a nap in the afternoon before the Seder. All the kids have to take a nap. And in fact, we do a lot of things to keep the kids awake. For example, the afikoman, stealing, hiding, whatever. We change a lot of things around in the Seder. We try to entice the kids to stay awake as late as possible. But very important, give them naps. And when you say about guests that want to eat and run, Mitch, that sounds grotesque. What, these guys haven't eaten in a week? Seriously, listen, what's the problem? I don't understand.
So if you start the Seder at 7:30, what time does dinner get served?
Now, the time you can start the Seder is 8:01 p.m.
This year.
8:01 for the first night.
That's
and
to start the Seder.
12 for the second Seder. Here's what I can tell you. I've got some creative solutions for you.
Okay.
If you absolutely have to start your Seder for some crazy reason at an early time, here's what you do. Call your Seder for 6:30. Call your Seder for 7. And what you should do is serve the food first. Serve the food. Give them fish. Give them salads. Give them soup. Give them the brisket for all I care. It doesn't matter. Give them the food. It's good. That's kosher. It's fine. But don't start the wine. Don't start the matzah. Don't start the bitter herbs. Don't start the Seder until 8:01 p.m. When you do it this way, you get the best of both worlds. Your guests will love you because it didn't take 2 hours to get to the meal, right? They'll be like, they'll come, and the first thing is they're eating. They'll think you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. Not since sliced bread, it's Pesach.
Since sliced matzah,
yes. Okay. They'll think you're the greatest thing since sliced matzah. However, when you hit 8:01, now you say, okay, now we're making the Kiddush. And then everybody's full, everybody's calm, nobody is experiencing withdrawal symptoms because they haven't eaten in 4 hours. You know what I mean? Everybody's relaxed, and now you can conduct the Seder.
Okay.
What do you think of that?
So let me explain to you why your Passover world is different than my Passover world.
Okay, tell me.
And my life's experience and your life's experience.
All right.
Okay. Just viewed through the prism of Passover, okay? In my Passover world, you have to sit through the Seder to get the dinner.
You have to experience the slavery in order to come to freedom.
That's right. Because if you ate the dinner first, guess what would happen?
What?
Nobody would be there for the Seder.
Mitch, what kind of people are you dealing with?
I'm telling you.
Are these like ex-convicts or something?
These are...
What people are you inviting to your Seder?
Typical everyday people.
Steve, am I wrong? Right,
what, they have the attention span of a mosquito? Seriously, what's going on?
Listen, you know how it works.
If you don't hold them hostage, then they will not stay.
Everybody, and
why? You lock the door and you say nobody leaves
until Elio shows up.
Right. So it's a different experience, okay?
Mitch. Oh my God. See, that's the problem with you. You always ground me. You always bring
you
me.
You don't understand how it works in most American Jewish Seders.
I cannot relate. So these guys are like, they're looking for an exit. The brisket's
getting
served. They're looking for a window. They're looking for a door.
You think everybody's there for the Seder? No. Everybody's there for the brisket.
Okay, Mitch. I'm going to hold my fire. Okay, I'm going to hold my fire. Because
we'll
on the
later.
Line,
okay.
We have another special guest. I'm not leaving this. I'm getting back to this. But first, we have to go to Cancun.
Well, our listeners know I'm right.
First, we have to go to Cancun. before we get back to this, and that is the Chabad of Cancun on the line. We have Rabbi Mendel Druck from Chabad Cancun. Good morning, Rabbi Druck, and welcome to the Shmooze.
Thank you. Good morning, Rabbi Vigler. What a pleasure.
What a pleasure to you to have you here on Shmooze Radio broadcast in South Florida as well as in Long Island. We don't have a show broadcast in Cancun in Mexico yet, right?
Not yet. We're working.
We've got to work on this. We're going international. But Mendel, welcome to the Shmooze, Rabbi Druck. Tell us, pray tell, what is going on in the Jewish community of Cancun? That's a nice place to live.
Yes, it definitely has some beautiful aspects to it. Well, first of all, what's unique, we're a very small community, a small Jewish community. We have a Hebrew school, a kindergarten, a shul, some of the regular activities. But what's unique about this particular place is that it really brings together Jewish people from all over the world on a constant basis. So while we are very small in numbers, we enlarge throughout, you know, the holidays and Shabbat and other times.
How many Jewish tourists?
Time of the year where we're,
how many Jewish tourists do you estimate?
Oh, there's hundreds of thousands. I mean, throughout the years, hundreds of thousands. I mean, again, you have millions of visitors here.
Amazing.
And if there's sun and beaches, there's going to be Jews.
So Rabbi Druck, let me tell you this. Let me ask you this question. So when it comes to the designation of Chabad rabbis around the world, some guys go to Vietnam, some guys go to Siberia, and other guys go to Cancun. Were you like the teacher's pet that you landed up in Cancun? How did this happen? Please share with our listeners.
The answer is I always wanted to go skiing. And so they put me here. They knew this is the only place I'll work.
Gotcha. So a lot of people don't really understand that when Chabad rabbis go out on shlichus, on our ambassadorship to open a Chabad house, we're there to stay. We're not there on some brief stint. We're not there for 4 or 5 years in order to go back to home base. When a Chabad rabbi moves out, that's it. They're there to stay. Our mission is to turn the lights off when Mashiach comes. Turn the lights off at the airport. You know, when the Messiah comes and all the Jews are back in Israel, that's it. We're done. That's when we go back. But Rabbi Druck, what happened specifically on Passover? I know a lot of religious Jews are heading down to Cancun for Pesach.
Yes, so Passover in general, there are two components. There are the religious families that come and participate in the hotel Passover programs, which provide them, you know, 3 meals a day throughout the day and services, etc., which we have a minimal involvement in that. But our particular activities, of course, is to provide for all the Jewish people that otherwise don't participate in those programs or otherwise would not have a stay there to participate in.
Okay, so you're basically telling us that there are religious people that want to have an easy Passover. I guess they want to spoil their wives. They don't want them to work too hard. Cleaning the house and cooking and whatever else might be done to transform the kitchen, you know, taking out all the chametz dishes and bringing in the Passover dishes and all those issues. So what they do is that they pay quite a lot of money to go to these kosher for Passover hotels where everything is like lot kosher. You have these celebrity chefs. You have extraordinary speakers, babysitting programs and excursions, and they go to these places around the world. It's becoming very, very trendy, from Italy to Mexico to South Africa to anywhere around the United States. Right here in Palm Beach Gardens, we have our own kosher for Passover hotel, and that's where they go in order to experience a luxurious kosher for Passover. I remember being at one of those over here in Palm Beach Gardens, and it was just unbelievable when we went from those morning services. They went to the Kiddush on the golf course, which was like a meal in and of itself, and as soon as they finished that, there was like a lamb on the spit. Then they moved on to lunch. I was like, who can possibly eat after that kind of a Kiddush? Rabbi Druck, what is it like with regards to hurricanes? Are you impacted at all by any of the hurricanes recently?
Thankfully, Baruch Hashem, in the last few years, it has not affected us. I mean, initially when we moved here about 11 years ago, it was soon after a big hurricane that did affect this place. But in the last few years, no, we've gotten the scares. We boarded up, but thankfully, you know, we've been protected by Hashem.
Fantastic. Thank God. So now I know that when I was considering a trip to Cancun, I know that there's a kosher restaurant there now.
Correct, and I hope you're still considering.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's just
we're
a matter of time. We just had a baby, so it's a little bit tricky here now. But pray tell, what is tell us about the kosher restaurant in Cancun. How does that work?
So this fantastic kosher restaurant that wasn't here it's only the last couple of years, and that itself enabled people that want to have a kosher meal or find a more comfortable environment to vacation, to relax, you know, a new place, a new destination on their map, and it enables them to have a kosher experience here.
So is you that, know, is that full time? It's 3 meals a day, or it's like
yeah.
a catering?
No. The restaurant's open all year.
Amazing. So it's open 24/6.
I wouldn't say 24, but how about 8/6?
8 hours a day, 6 days a week. And I'm sure you can order Shabbos meals as well.
Yeah.
So if you want to go to Cancun, you can go to have a kosher experience, whether you're on Passover or all year round. And with those that amount of visitors coming, you said hundreds of thousands of Jewish visitors. I'm sure there's a lot of kosher visitors coming to Cancun, and that's incredible that you're able to give them that that experience to be able to allow them to keep the highest standards of kosher. Is that under your supervision?
No, it's not under our supervision, but it's a kosher restaurant.
Fantastic. Which supervision is it under?
A rabbinic supervision from Mexico City.
Oh, Mexico City, so it's local. Mexico. Yeah. Great. So one more question I want to ask you, Rabbi, is I heard that there's some crime issues in the area over there, or can you comment on that?
I've been hearing that too. It's certainly an issue. It's certainly a matter that we're taking strong consideration. However, like every city you travel to, you know, there's areas that you stay away from. There's areas that you're more cautious and you keep an extra eye on, and this so too is true here. Again, it's particularly because of the unknown, and you know, it's foreign territory for people, so it's definitely a greater concern for people, and it makes more noise in the media. And again, you know, it concerns us greatly. But as of now, you know, we take the precautions and we keep on with our lives.
Must be rough for you, an American-born boy, to move to outside of the United States, to be so close and yet not to feel like you're in America. It's, there's a certain
Correct.
Privilege to be able to live in America where you know that, you know, it's certainly a first world country and it's a tremendous commitment and sacrifice on your part to be able to live out there in Central America. So if you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Shmooze, separating the facts from the fiction, the Baba Mises from the bottom line. It's Rabbi Mendel Druck from the Chabad of Cancun, who's on the line right now, live from Cancun, telling us about the Jewish community out there. And it sounds incredible. It sounds like you're able to have a full Jewish experience with whether it's kosher for Passover or whether it's kosher all year round. You can have that full experience. Is there any anti-Semitism out there, Rabbi Druck, in Cancun?
I would say zero. You know, in 11 years that I'm here walking around with a yarmulke and tzitzis, I've never been approached and never been vilified.
Chabad rabbis are very hard to miss. Very hard to miss Chabad rabbis. They look very unmistakably Jewish. If you've not experienced anything in 11 years, Chazak, God bless you. You should be able to go from strength to strength. Even in Palm Beach, I've had experiences. What?
No, very positive.
Fantastic. I'll tell you, even in Palm Beach, we've had a couple instances, at least verbal insults. But thankfully, I'm glad to hear that in Cancun, you're anti-Semitism free. Thank God.
Rabbi, a quick question. When you're hosting a Seder in a tourist center like Cancun, is there anything different about it? Is it larger? Do you make any special, you know, recognition? I mean, how does that work?
Okay, so it's actually a very unique experience. It's one of my favorites because, first of all, you know, we're attracting a crowd of about 300-400 people at our Seder. And literally, you can go around the tables and you'll see perhaps 12, 15, 18 countries represented amongst the Jewish community. So there's many languages. You know, we do the Manishtana, for example, in eight, nine languages.
Huh.
Yeah, you know, from German to Spanish and every language in between. And it's a fascinating experience because it's a really unifying experience. As a gentleman once came to me and said, Rabbi, you know, Passover seems to bring out the division amongst the Jews. You know, some eat rice, some don't. And then I thought about it, I contemplated it, and after a moment I thought to myself, isn't it amazing with all these minute differences that we find amongst each other? We're all sitting around the same Seder table, the same matzah, the same mor, the same Haggadah. I mean, there's actually so little that differentiates us, yet every community, every custom adds so much flavor to the existing narration. So it's a really beautiful experience. I really look forward to Passover every year, all year.
That's a great thought over there. You know, in the theme of unity, I got to tell you that I often tell people that Chabad is like Verizon, because wherever you go, like Verizon, Chabad has got you covered. But as I talk to you, I realize that it's really not true. Because Verizon has got no coverage in Cancun. Verizon doesn't cover you in Siberia or in Australia, not at any price. I mean, that's crazy, you know? But Chabad has got a man in Cancun. We've got you covered wherever you go. Wherever there are Jewish people, there is a Chabad center near you, and you can always find the local Chabad center at chabad.org/centers. You'll always find your nearest Chabad center, whether it's your grandchildren in college in Florence, or if it's your grandparents moving out to some retirement home village somewhere, whether you're going out on vacation somewhere exotic and strange, there is always a Chabad house nearby, and that is able to be found at Chabad.org/centers, where you can find your local Chabad center. Rabbi Druk, if you could just have any closing comments to share with our listeners.
Yes, actually, just one thought I would share. You know, Steve, when I spoke to him earlier on the phone last week, he got me thinking about the Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim, a statement we say at the conclusion every year at the Seder. And I remember an anecdote that I once heard where there was a gentleman that it continuously invited a guest annually for the Passover Seder. And he said, you know, last year he also said Lashana Haba next year in Jerusalem, and we're still here. And here the host turned red in the face and was embarrassed. And he turned to Hashem, and Hashem said, please, take us out of exile. Bring us to Jerusalem so I don't have to go through the shame again of telling my guest something that has not come to fruition. The truth is, I mean, it shouldn't come out of shame, but the truth is, this is an aspiration of every Jew. And that's what's something beautiful about the Seder. We put our differences aside. And we really unify around the greater cause that we want to see an end to our exile, and we want to grow spiritually and grow closer to Hashem together.
Rabbi Druk, let me give you that was a beautiful interpretation. I just want to give you my own interpretation to that. Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim. You know, Jerusalem is the land flowing with milk and honey, right? Milk and honey. So I like to tell people that milk and honey are very unique in the sense that milk originates from the blood of the mother. It originates as treif milk, and it becomes beautiful, kosher, white milk. And honey also originates in the treif bee, and it becomes the sweet kosher honey. Both of these items originate as treif, blood into milk, and the bee, which is treif, into honey, which is kosher. And Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim, in my perception, my understanding, means not only the obvious aspiration to go to Israel, to be in Jerusalem next year, but also that we should experience transformation. That we're like the honey coming from the bee, like the milk coming from the blood. We too should experience transformation, that this Passover Seder should be able to transform our consciousness from slavery into a consciousness of freedom, that we should be able not to feel sorry for ourselves as Jews, but to be proud of our identity as Jews, proud of our unique and intimate relationship with God, to be able to celebrate that on a daily basis, to be able to experience true transformation in the year ahead.
Amen.
Thank you, Rabbi Druk, Chabad of Cancun, locked and loaded. Thank you very much. Moving on, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Shmooze with the Rabbi and the CEO. Mitch Zachary is the CEO of Zachary Financial Consultants. I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens. And we'll be right back with our little debate here on the Passover Seder. Coming back right after this. Don't go away.
Are you confused or just plain bored by the new tax laws? The professionals at Zachary Financial Consultants have studied every line of the 1,000-page bill and know all the ways that you can benefit from it, as well as all of the hidden traps you need to avoid. If you're a business owner, you may be able to save tens of thousands of dollars in taxes. But in order to take advantage of them, you may have to make some changes. The professionals at Zachary Financial Consultants can easily guide you through these muddy waters. Having over 37 years of financial experience, the staff at Zachary Financial Consultants include CPAs, certified financial planners, and attorneys. They regularly assist their clients in making sure they're maximizing their after-tax investment performance, that their families are adequately protected in case of a catastrophe, and in providing a customized financial plan which they help to implement and monitor. At Zachary Financial Consultants, every client is treated with personalized care as if they were part of the family. You can speak directly with the CEO, Mitch Zachary, at 561-508-8446, or email him at mzachary@zacharyfinancial.com. They are conveniently located in Palm Beach Gardens, and they offer free consultations. That's Zachary Financial Consultants, 561-508-8446.
Lease up to luxury retirement living at the Stephen and Petra Levin Tower at Morse Life. The tower is all about indulgence and luxury, redefining retirement living with amenities that are second to none. Fine dining, a pampering spa, golf memberships, tennis, concierge services, and walking paths for your pet are among the pleasures of living at the tower. For a lifestyle that's first in its class, call 800-49-TOWER. Or visit MorseLifeTower.com and secure your choice of floor plans today.
Are you retired or nearing retirement? By now you probably realize that nest egg you had set up is not nearly enough to carry you through retirement. Here's some good news. They specialize in retirement planning, estate planning, income taxation, and investment strategies for people who are retired or approaching retirement looking for ways to maximize their income. It's not too late to get on the right track to financial freedom. Mark Lenski has been a financial advisor since 1986 and carries a certified financial planner's designation and all the tips, tools, and secrets you need to find financial stability. They also focus on 401k plans and passive real estate solutions. So whether you're retired, nearing retirement, or just want to stay ahead of the game, contact Mark Lenski to set up your consultation. 561-328-7391. That's 561-328-7391. US 1 and Donald Ross, right in Juneau Beach.
Investment Group is an independent firm with securities offered through Summit Brokerage Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Advisory services offered through Summit Financial Group, Inc., a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to The Rabbi and the CEO. Watch the show live on Facebook, facebook.com/gardensrabbi. Now, back to your hosts, Rabbi Dovid Vigler and CEO Mitch Zachary.
Separating the facts from the fiction, the Bubba Mises from the bottom line. You're listening to The Shmooze with The Rabbi and the CEO. Mitch Zachary is the CEO. I'm Rabbi Dovid Vigler of Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens, where you'll find traditional Jewish values for contemporary Jews just like you. We're talking about the Passover Seder. We're talking about the importance of observing the Passover Seder, the most celebrated mitzvah around the entire Jewish nation of the most celebrated mitzvah of the year, I think. I think more people observe the Seder than come to Yom Kippur services. Even though maybe Bris and Mezuzah might be a little bit more popular, but in terms of around the year events, probably Passover is the most celebrated Jewish holiday. Even people that never go to synagogue, I'm sure, will experience a Passover Seder. However, it's very important. Timing is everything. Timing is everything. You can't cast a vote for an election before the election begins. You cannot board a plane before the plane is there, or boarding a train. I mean, you'd probably get killed if you try to board a train before it arrives in the station. God forbid. When it comes to the mitzvah of Passover, this is not just cute, sentimental, testimonial stuff. This is, a mitzvah means a connection. The very word mitzvah means not just a commandment. It means an intimate connection with the infinite, almighty Creator. When we fulfill the will of God, we are actually forging a direct line, an absolute connection with God. But that's got to be at the right time. If you miss the boat, so to speak, then you haven't forged that connection. Eating matzah on the evening of Passover has to be in the evening of Passover. It can't be in the afternoon prior. So Mitch, you say that if you feed your guests before the Passover Seder, they're going to bolt.
For sure, 100%. They're not going to bolt, but it's not going to be an enjoyable
Seder. Don't make a graceful exit.
Yeah, it won't be an enjoyable Seder, you know.
Okay.
And then so, they're not going to leave. But let me just...
Well, can you start your Seder later? Call it for 7:30.
Let me explain to you something.
Yes.
Okay. Let me contrast your Seder to my Seder.
Okay.
And I'm kind of believing my Seder is typical of American Jewish Seders in most families, non-Hasidic families. Okay. So I would say my Seder lasts about half hour to 45 minutes. Okay?
The whole Seder?
The whole Seder. And
how do you do it so fast? I know you read Hebrew so quickly.
That is fast.
I can't even do it so fast.
That is fast. Maybe there's a little bit of speed reading, right?
And it's simple because we go around the table. Everybody reads.
Right.
And we don't... There's not a lot of discussion. We just read the book. I mean, how long does it take adults to read... taking turns reading the Haggadah.
Okay.
It doesn't take that long.
Okay. But I want you to know, you know, I enjoy every Shabbos dinner with my children. We sit around the table, the kids ask questions, and we give them answers, and they respond back. It's the mitzvah of Passover, you should know, is not just about reading the book. One of the four most important mitzvahs of the Passover Seder is Vehigadeta Levincho, and you shall tell your child, your son. You've got to talk to your kids. You've got to bridge the generation gap, and that happens over the Passover Seder meal. You have to talk about why it's important for us to be having a Seder tonight. Why it's important for us to marry Jewish or to be here, to identify as Jews. This is the conversation that is the biblical commandment. You're supposed to talk, to have a conversation, meaningful dialogue with the people around the Seder, with your children and your grandchildren.
So in my Seder, we have no children. We haven't for a while. When we had children, it was different.
Even if they're grown kids.
Yeah, well, it's not the same. It's not the same as when you have children that are learning the story for the first time.
Yeah, there's a certain excitement, yeah.
Right, that they've heard about it in Hebrew school, then there they are at the Seder.
Let me tell you, my three-year-old...
There's a certain energy there.
My three-year-old has told us so many, three times already, about the whole Passover story. And Daddy, you know what? You know what? Pharaoh, he says, Moses' people were stuck in Egypt. And they asked Pharaoh to let them go. And Pharaoh said no. But you know what happened? He got punished. And he goes on to tell us with the most incredible excitement about the 10 plagues in order.
That is great.
He is so excited about this whole story. It's amazing.
Yeah, now that's... But when you have children, there's certainly a different energy. What we always did was we had a... It was a totally different Seder when you have children. Because, you know, I would say we would save explanations of the Seder and what happened, and we would pass it around.
But Mitch, here's where I want to challenge
you. It was different. It's a different experience.
But Mitch, here's where I want to challenge you. This is so important, you know. When you're talking to kids, it's easy to inspire them. Mm-hmm. Because you don't need to know much in order to inspire a child. You can tell them about the frogs and the blood and the lice, and that's hoo-ha! It's so exciting. The question is, when your kids are older, it's going to take a lot more deeper conversation to excite them. In other words, you can ask them this question. You can ask them this question. Is Passover only for kids, or does it also speak to adults? What is the message that we as adults need to be gleaning from the Passover experience? Do you know what I'm saying? That itself can launch a meaningful conversation into our recalling the Passover Exodus today. You understand the challenge, Mitch, that I'm presenting to you, is that I want you to reinvent your Passover experience, reinvent your Seder experience, where it's not just about a rudimentary elementary school level, but rather it's a tertiary college, university level, or grown-up kids level, where you can talk to your 30-year-old children and ask them, have a meaningful conversation with them about Jewish identity. Maybe you can start the conversation with asking them why it's so important to marry Jewish. What do you think of that?
That's interesting. It's an interesting perspective. I think our Seders tend to be quite kind of rote.
That's what I want to challenge you to reconsider.
You know, we have a routine. We have a Haggadah. We follow the Haggadah. We go around the table responsively. Done. Let's eat.
Okay, so what I want you to do is to make it more animated. What I want you to do is to realize that the mitzvah of Passover is actually to have a meaningful conversation. It's a meaningful conversation. It's not just about check, 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 reread this paragraph, read that paragraph. You know, half the Haggadah doesn't really make too much sense. You know that, right? It's very difficult to understand what half the Haggadah is really talking about.
I don't know if you read the same Haggadah as we read.
Yeah,
they talk about these ancient rabbis and what they said, and this one said
and
that.
And they're arguing about how many plagues there were. I thought there was just 10 plagues.
Yeah, yeah. It's like
200 plagues, 400 plagues,
Rabbi Akiva said this, and Rabbi Eliezer said this, and it's like, oh my God.
Look, that's advanced stuff where you're able to learn about what these rabbis are arguing about. That actually becomes a very meaningful conversation. But Steve, how do you feel about this? About, you know, you've got grown kids. Are your kids going to be around your Seder?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you feel about having a very meaningful, relevant, fresh conversation instead of taking the Passover Seder out of a can, you know, and like reading it and then putting it back in the can for next year? How do you feel about making it a relevant, modern, sophisticated conversation about American Jewish identity?
I think that's fabulous. I think, you know, what Mitch talked about, though, is very, not only is it very common, but that's the way we were raised, right? To follow the Seder, follow all the procedures. And I think the idea of opening it up and engaging in a conversation like that is fabulous. I think
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that you shouldn't follow the stages. You should. But as you follow the stages, you should do so with flexibility. You know, feel free to say, hey, one second. We're eating bitter herbs. This is the 50th time in my life that I'm eating bitter herbs on Passover. Why? Why are we eating bitter herbs? You can ask, and you can have that conversation. You can say, you can ask your the people around your Seder. Just ask them questions. I always love to teach through Socratic method, which is through asking questions. And I want to encourage you to do the same. Pose those questions. Think about it before the Seder. You got a whole week until Friday night to think about what is meaningful to you about Judaism. You know, a lot of people come to me and they say, Rabbi, where did we go wrong? Why did our children not marry Jewish, right? We sent them to a Hebrew school.
They were bar mitzvah.
And they were mitzvah. This is, my friends, this is ground zero of Jewish identity and Jewish continuity. Ground zero of Jewish continuity is around the Passover Seder. If you're going to be able to have a meaningful conversation with your children, if they can see that it means a lot to you, then there will be a subliminal message that will seep across to them as well. If you can have an honest, authentic, raw conversation around the Passover table, you will be bridging the generation gap by mere virtue of having the conversation, of having the courage to have the conversation. We all know that many of us don't actually communicate with our family members. We merely coordinate. You know, lunch or dinner is at this time. I'll pick you up at that time. Don't forget to take out the garbage. Stop off at Publix. This is not communication. This is merely coordination. When we sit around the Passover table and we discuss the issues, when we're communicating values, principles, and red lines which we don't cross, and why it's important to me, you tell them stories of your childhood, about your Zayda, you know, that great story you told us about your Zayda coming to America, you know, when I first met you, Mitch. That was great stuff. You can rehash that story with your kids. Make sure that they'll remember that long after you're gone to be able to say that story over to their kids as well. This is bridging the generation gap. That's what's so important about the Passover Seder, to make sure that we have the courage to face the people that we love, to face the people around the Passover table, to face our family, and to have that meaningful conversation. So absolutely, I'm encouraging you to have an out-of-the-box Passover Seder this year. Still, follow the rote, follow the 15 steps of the Seder, but think out of the box. Make it real, make it relevant, make it a 2018 Seder, instead of making it a 1922 Seder, you know, as long as the stains in your Manischewitz Haggadah, which you were talking about before. You've got a new Haggadah this year, no stains, let's make it a new Seder. Do you know what I mean? Enough out of the stains of the old, now we're making new stains, now we're forging forward with a new, meaningful, newly relevant Passover Seder, because we have matured. Look how far you've matured in the past 1 year. Think about it. Every single one of us have spiritually matured since last Pesach. Surely we should have a Passover Seder that is richer and more meaningful.
I will, Rabbi. Thank you. Sorry, thank you for that inspiration.
Yeah, sorry, I got a little excited there. But
no, that's good.
One thing I want to let you know, very, very important. We spoke about what you should do on Passover. Let's talk about a minute about what you should not do on Passover. Chametz. Chametz is persona non grata on Passover, which means, Mitch, next Passover, do not walk in here with a
bagel.
With a bagel. Absolutely. No,
I think I've been good. I think Passover I'm usually good.
I know, of course. I'm just kidding. But very important. No bagels for the entire 8 days of Passover, which means from this Friday at noon.
Okay, but that's easy.
Until the following Saturday
real
night.
Real quick, let's focus on rice.
Wait, hold on to the rice a second. Hold on to rice.
That's an easy one. Bagels are easy. A lot of people don't know this.
Let me be... Okay, rice is... I wouldn't even mind if you ate rice, because according to the Sephardic Jews, it's okay. But this is what I want to tell you. From this Friday until the following Saturday at nightfall, for 8 days, you should not be eating any pasta. No. Nothing which is made out of the five grains. Wheat, barley, spelt, oats and rye, because if it's made out of the five grains, it is chametz. It is pure chametz, which includes candy, that includes vodka, whiskey.
Potato vodka is good, though.
Potato vodka would be okay if it's kosher certified for Passover. But otherwise, any candy, any chametz, liquor, breads, cookies, cakes, pastas, all of that stuff is 100% treif. It's more treif than pink. Is on Passover. And that's why you got to avoid that from this Friday until the next Saturday evening. And hopefully with that, we'll be able to have a kosher for Passover, a true kosher Passover, being able to experience not only freedom on our diets, but also freedom in our spiritual diets, being able to transform from darkness to light, from non-kosher to kosher, from sadness to joy. L'chaim, next year in Jerusalem. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time, because next Sunday is Passover.
But
so there's no show. No show next Sunday. So we'll have to see you in 2 weeks' time after Passover. Next Sunday is Pesach. See you later, my friends. Shalom, and have a wonderful, wonderful Passover. L'shana Baruch Shalom, next year in Jerusalem.